Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, before we begin, I'm going to go off script real quick. It's like, wow, what a surprise, because that's kind of what we do sometimes on the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. Chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. But I just wanted to say that it's been my pleasure, you know, my honor to do this with my dad twice a week, now three times a week, but also to share this story every time we air. It always reminds me, you know, and just going through life and dealing with the good and bad that life brings us, and just trying to find that balance, you know. So, you know, I always hope that with this story that it helps you as well to find balance as you go through life. So the story goes, an old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the grandson, a fight is going on inside me, and this is a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf is evil, this anger, envy, sorrow, full of regret, with greed and arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority. It lies with false pride, superiority, and a whole lot of ego. The other wolf, though, he continues, the other wolf is good. This wolf is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, full of humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. Now, this same fight, he tells the grandson, is going on inside you and inside every other person, too. The grandson, he sat there and thought about it. And he looked up and asked the grandfather, which wolf wins? The old Cherokee just simply replied, it's the wolf you feed.
Yeah.
Good morning.
If you're not seen green,
It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, que tal? Namaste, Oki, and welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of hosting duties live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, only on Blog Talk Radio, live on Blog Talk Radio. All shows are saved and archived on your favorite listening platform. Holding down the other half of our hosting duties, some call him Unc, some call him the Lions Historian. I just simply call him my best friend. He's my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-O? How's it going, man?
What's
Happy
up,
Monday.
What's up, Wilfredo? What's up? Yeah, and some people call him the old asshole. I just feel like saying that. What the heck? Yeah, man. How you doing,
I mean,
man? I'm not going to.
No, it's cool. You know, I just feel you getting ready for that every time I say some call him, you know. There's a lot of fill in the blanks we can go with that, you know.
Oh, man, you know.
I'm just saying, you know, the last historian.
Yeah, and that's proper, and that's decent, and that's in order, you know. But it ain't complete. Yeah. And I see some of my favorite people in the studio can attest to the fact that they had many other names for me. But anyway, you know, that's another story for another time, right? Yeah. Things are good, man. Things are good. I'm wrapping up the last few days here in Austin. I'll be heading back by the end of the week, and with mixed feelings. You know, it's always a very restorative experience to be in this somewhat secluded type of lifetime, you know, lifestyle, you know, here, you know, not really knowing anybody and nobody really knowing me, and just having, you know, the area, just having this home and the environment to myself, you know, me and the critters and the plants, sitting on the porch watching people go by, you know, watching how they live in this little bubble in this little community called Mueller here in Austin, you know. And it's always a reminder, you know, of the non-experience, you know, that time in my life where, you know, I grew up in concrete, you know, not in greenery, you know, and manicured lawns, you know, and people ride by on push carts. You know, well, we had our push carts, but they were made out of orange crates and roller skates. Yeah, it's not that we didn't have all this stuff. It's just that, you know, when I sit out on the porch, it just, as I've done for the last 3 weeks, and just, you know, speak to the people that are going by, and just watching everybody walk their dogs and stuff. And, you know, like even remembering when it wasn't a necessity to pick up dog poop. And now it's like, oh, it's a national catastrophe if you leave your dog droppings on the grass. But anyway, you know,
right.
Just a reflective time of thinking over the course of this past 75 years, you know, the ins and the outs of what life is, where life has sent me and what life has brought me, you know. So it's always an invigorating time to arrive, and it's always a push-pull of leaving, you know. But it's always perfect timing. You know, it reminds me of the independent lifestyle that I don't really live anymore. But it also reminds me of, you know, the life of independence that I have lived, and, you know, and what it's all brought to me along the way. So, you know, it's been a blessing regardless to be able to do this periodically. You know, it's been the first time since COVID, you know, and I don't know if you or anyone else of the millions. Okay. Listening, you know, ever get a chance to really have that kind of internal experience, you know, just that internal retreat, so to say. Man, you know, I know that the clutter of life sometimes dictates that, you know, most take vacations, which is cool. But, you know, we never really can vacate ourselves you know, but to have that time allowed where it's nothing but peace to experience. No agenda, you know, no door knocks to have to answer, you know, no room service to have to send out for, you know, no people kicking sand in your face on the beach, not worried about getting seasick, you know, not thinking about the flight home, you know, before you even land where you're going, but just being able to just sit in peaceful reflection, man, it's such a blessing, you know. Anyway.
Did you, so that's just besides, you know, Mondays and Wednesdays, and, you know, we just kicked off Saturday's new show, Habits. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen, Saturdays, 10 a.m. here on Blog Talk Radio on the Greenhouse Effect. So besides, you know, our shows here, did you have a chance to get into any other creativity? Did you write any sketching, anything like that? Or,
well, I'm always writing because of the nature of the show. You know, it always puts me in that writer mode, I mean, you know. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, I love my poetry. And I don't care how much it's boring to everybody else. You know, I know that poetry is not the staple of American society anymore. I get that. But it still, you know, does it. I love scripture, and scripture justifies my love for poetry because to me,
yeah,
the King James Version, nothing but poetry, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think the heart speaks in – I don't think the heart speaks the words that comes out of a person's mouth. I think – the heart speaks from the soul, and I think the language of the soul is poetry, you know, and that's why it's so abstract, you know, and, you know, so anyway, yeah, and also I've had a chance to take a look at a couple other things, but I want to say this right quick. I'm changing the name of Saturday's show. Whoa, what was that? I'm changing the name of Saturday's show from Habits to Creatures of Habit. You know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So when you see that posted, you know where that's coming from. It's not a typo. It's just a change in the title. It's going to be Creatures of Habit. You know, you talk about surprises, right?
Yeah, okay, yeah. There you go. Creatures of,
you know,
Habit.
So that's it, man. You know, otherwise I'm going to spend the rest of the show just babbling. So it's been, and I also had a chance. You know, and maybe it wasn't a good idea at the time, but I thought it was. I dove into a pile of photographs I have from all of my experiences with working with the retreat center over the course of the last 25, 30 years. And, you know, I didn't realize I had so many photographs, and I realized when I was putting them together that most of them are photographs that folks sent me. They're not ones I took. But a lot of them are. But anyway, you know, what I have memory of is where the photographs were taken. But what I wasn't prepared for in organizing it, because I wanted to make the album look like a journey, you know, into the mysteries. But what I wasn't prepared for was the floodgates to be open of memories. Man, it's almost like I got so lost in going through the album, it felt like I wandered into a dream, man. It was quite something. And to pull out of it, you know, like, you know, a couple times it even left me with a few tears, but not depression, you know, and not that thing that we do, you know, of getting to that self-deprecation. We just start beating ourselves up for all the shoulda, woulda, coulda that have come and gone, but just, you know, tears of memory, you know, which is sometimes joy, which is sometimes pain. You know, but the luxury of memory is that only the things that matter stick. You know, that's what blows my mind. You know, and memories, I really think, are what shapes character. So I have absolutely nothing but fond memories of spending that time putting that album together. It sounds like, you know, it's like, man, what are you down there all that time? You had a chance, you know, you didn't go on hikes. You didn't walk to the neighborhood. You didn't go to restaurants. You didn't, all you sat doing was sat on the porch, feed the critters and play with your photographs. What kind of, you know, meditation is that? What kind of retreat is that?
That sounds great to me, man.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
Yeah, so
I'm sure there's a lot of people
right
listening
now,
like, man, I'll take that.
Yeah, so I cut into your time, man. It's almost quarter past and you ain't done your due diligence yet, man. So let me get out the way.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I'm not going to let you sell yourself short on that, man. I'm sure that, a lot of people listening probably would have wanted to do the same thing. So that's good. Glad to hear it. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we before we continue the show, we'd like to take a moment to just, as Dad said, do our due diligence and a couple of reminders for you all listening out there to our live shows Monday and Wednesday, but even to the recorded shows, too. You just have the benefit of rewinding when you're listening. But as always, we like to make sure that you've got something to write with, so take a moment to grab a pencil and paper, a pencil and pad, a post-it note, a marker, a back of an envelope, or a napkin. I don't care what you got. We want to make sure you got something to write with, something to write it on. Maybe you've got questions. Maybe you got comments. We want to make sure you don't forget it. Who knows? Maybe you might even pick up something from our discussion. You know, so again, we want to make sure you got something to write down. Maybe you want to research something and call us out on it. So write it down. That's cool, too. There's different ways that you can engage with us. Different ways you can engage with us on our live shows Mondays and Wednesdays and now Saturdays. One way is that you can call in directly. I'm sure you've got a pen and paper handy by now. You can call in. For those of you that are listening online, I'm sorry, for those that like to call in, our number here is 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6094. And if you want to chime in, press the 1 button on your keypad. That'll bring you in our queue, and we'll bring you in as soon as we can. I was jumping a little bit ahead of myself. Sorry about that. So on our online page, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect, that's the Greenhouse FX, the letter FX, with your free Blog Talk Radio account, profile, whatever you want to call it, you can access the chat room directly, and you can talk with us there. Or you can always use the Facebook event page in the discussion tab and post any questions, comments, or anything like that. So there you have it from Bill and Will and the Greenhouse Effect.
Yeah. My man. I'm amazed at how smoothly you do that, man, week in and week out. Yeah. So what's on the agenda for tonight, man? Are we going to talk some more about the Mayflower Compact?
Yeah, let's definitely keep it going.
Whoa.
You were what happened? We're okay?
Nothing. Yeah, we're okay. Yeah. Just the audio thing, but we could.
Okay.
I have a sensitive headset.
You were on fire last week. Just continuing.
Really?
Pretty well, I think so. Pretty much continue where we left off last week. You mentioned the Mayflower Compact and its influence, if you will, on the, if I recall correctly, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Is that correct?
Well, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, just to keep them in order. What are you doing, man? Is that paper you're shuffling through? Wow, it's coming through loud and clear. Yeah, so anyway, Mayflower Compact, you know, just to do a quick review, because unlike you and obviously others, I never heard of the Mayflower Compact at any time. At any time in my life. You know, it's, and what the heck? Do you hear all that? Or is it just me?
Maybe can you hear me right now? Can you hear me right now? You can hear me?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so the Mayflower Compact, you know, was this thing that wasn't even what it turned out to be that the Pilgrims created. It was called the Mayflower Compact by those who benefited from the whole experience. See, I had my own idea of the Mayflower and the Pilgrims. And I'm sure that somewhere in grammar school, not at all that I recall in high school, but in grammar school, you know, I'm sure that they told the whole story, but my little, you know, 9-year-old, 10-year-old mind had an adventure. You know, I saw all these folks who set sail from somewhere on the other side of the ocean, and they just set sail, you know, with the idea of the promise of a new land. How exciting, you know, and that's how my adventurous nature saw it, I'm sure. And I just saw this group of folks, you know, disembark from this big ship, you know, after this voyage of hope across the Atlantic, you know, that at the time my little mind couldn't see it any bigger than Lake Michigan. So, and then they landed on this place called Plymouth Rock, like it was a place that existed before they got there. And Indians were waiting to embrace them. And then they all sat down and had a wonderful, happy Thanksgiving dinner. And the Indians taught them how to survive. You know, so that's kind of how my little, you know, imaginative mind had painted the story. So when I was, you know, when we started doing this series that started with, you know, how Africans became Negroes in America and everything that came from that, like also, you know, the question of where is Negro land? You know, it led to where we are now in this series about the history of white people in America. And I realize, and maybe folks don't know that I realize this, so let me just state it now, sort of as a disclaimer. I realize topics like this and titles like this, the history of white people in America, just saying white people, I know that stirs a lot of folks up. And I know a lot of people start thinking, uh-oh, he's getting ready to get combative. He's getting ready to turn into his, you know, spear shirker self, and, you know, and really he's a, you know, a racist in black skin and all that, just because I say the history of white people in America. But white ain't a race. So just like, you know, black ain't a race, but black is a derivative from Negro, which was a created race. So therefore it is, in fact, an offshoot race of, I guess, the descendants of Africans. So it has its roots in that sense of the name being created for an unknown people kidnapped from their native land, and they became Negro in America. That was the birth of the Negro race. So there has to be a birth of the white race in my mind, you know. So it's like, okay, let's find out where white shows up in history. And it wasn't really until like the 17th century that the whole use of it in England became a standard, but not as a race, but as a separation, as the higher order from the lower order. So like if you were a common person, you weren't seen as white, you were seen as a commoner. And how this translated then into the story of, you know, the Mayflower, the Pilgrims, first of all, weren't even the dominant number of people on the Mayflower. I think, what was it? And I didn't make a point of making side notes about this, so I'm just kind of flipping through pages just to see. It was like, you know, 106 or like 107, 102 passengers, okay, on the Mayflower. And like 41 of them, or 42 of them were the Pilgrims themselves. Everybody else was like laborers, you know, some hired, some contracted, but some were like indentured servants, and some were orphan children, you know, and that's the group that set sail, you know, for the new land, the new continent, the new world, as it was called. And along the way, of course, the travel across the unpredictable ocean called the Atlantic threw them hundreds of miles off course. So I didn't know that, you know, the Pilgrims were supposed to land in Virginia, thrown off course. They landed in Massachusetts, you know, but I also didn't know that there was a contract that had been drawn up before they even left England with the Virginia Company. That's the name of the place, the Virginia Company. And the idea was the Virginia Company paid for the expenses for the folks to get to the new world. And the idea was that this group of pilgrims with the merchants and the laborers and the craftspersons and the indentured servants were going to create this colony, and they were going to pay back to the Virginia Company through their profits. So this was like a land deal, you know, in a country that already had inhabitants. But somehow, you know, again, that didn't matter. You know, that wasn't the New World Order, you know, and it was like kind of like the New World Order was take what you want, you know, and charge people for it. So, but along the way, and this is one of the compelling parts about the story to me, along the way, it was further revealed that those who weren't pilgrims on the boat were called strangers, and they separated themselves from the strangers by recognizing that the strangers were all those who were, you know, coming to provide the backbreaking work to create this new life. So that's the story that I did not have in my head. But that's so consistent with the stories that I was taught about, you know, this land that was stolen right out from underneath its original inhabitants. But not like that. That's not the way it was delivered. It was like, I remember very clearly being told when the question was asked, well, how was it justified, you know, that people could just come and just take the land from those who were living here? And in so many words, that's how the question was presented. But what I remember was the teacher saying, well, those original inhabitants, the Indians, weren't doing anything with the land anyway. So the whole idea of industry is what gave justification for the taking of the land. You know, so the pilgrims and strangers were not really committed, you know, themselves, you know, to the laws of England, but rather to follow laws that they would make for themselves, establishing a departure from the rule of Parliament by creating a new model of government. In the coming decades, key figures such as Jean-Jacques Rousseau, John Locke, and eventually those so-called founding fathers of this country asserted their own ideas about consensual government. And the foundation of the rule of law as we understand it today is based on that idea of consensual government. Although those initial colonists remained committed to their set of laws, the quality of life was utterly impoverished. You know, within the first year, more than half the folks fell ill and died, victims of many epidemics. So, you know, like we hear the story about them bringing disease that began to kill the Indians, but their own diseases began to kill themselves, you know, to the point to where they were almost just completely obliterated. And that's where the Indians stepped in, you know. But that wasn't the saving grace. What was the saving grace for those of the so-called Mayflower Compact was that the colonists actively recruited more indentured servants from England, Scotland, and Ireland. So they had a continuous flow of free labor. Now, indentured servants aren't, although similar to the context of slaves, they aren't slaves themselves. Indentured servants are people who serve an extended period of time in labor. And the idea of their extended period of time in labor is to pay off a debt, but they don't get paid. Their labor is their salary, so to say. And after they work for so long, then they're set free. Sometimes, according to the scripture, after 7 years, provided with the necessary needs to meet their ends once being released. But most cases, pay off a debt, and then you let go of bondage, and hopefully you continue on with us and be able to shop your own wares. But that's the difference. With slaves, well, it's just what it says. There's no such thing as paying off a debt. You know, there's no debt to be paid off. You're a slave, and slave is all you know, and slave is all you're going to be, and slave is all we want you for, and there's no rights, absolutely none at all. So, but I'm sure we understand. I'm sure everybody knows the difference between a slave and an indentured servant. And make no mistake about it, they're coming from England. There were, in fact, documented indentured servants that were black, you know, so, but there were also slaves. You know, that research also revealed there were also slaves that were a part of the development of the colony that was founded on what we call today Plymouth Rock. So the thing for me that well, there's several things that are so compelling to me. The histories of the founding of this country, long before the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution came into being, is the treatment of women. You know, women were denied whatever rights that were drafted by the original laws written by the Pilgrims and some members of the Strangers. Not all, obviously. You know, the women were excluded, so I'm pretty sure the orphan children were. And I'm pretty sure there was only some select men, you know, of the Strangers that were allowed to sign and have any input into the development and the drafting of the original laws that would be the ones that would govern the colonists, separate from Parliament, separate from England altogether. So the colonies' early years were disproportionately, you know, hard on women. You know, 78% of died, man, during the first winter. You know, now I know Chicago winters can be rough, but, you know, 78% of part of your population dying because of the first experience in winter. Yeah, that's more than a notion for people to come south. But anyway, you know, even during that first celebration, that first, you know, Thanksgiving that, you know, Norman Rockwell captured in his, you know, Thanksgiving dinner and all that beautiful stuff. You know, the women, there were only four married women who were allowed to attend that celebration. And the only reason they were allowed to attend is that so they could take care of the 25 children that were present at the celebration. So it was the dudes sat at the table, you know, and the women waited on them and took care of the children. So the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution drew from the Mayflower Compact, you know, which, you know, as we know, barred women, Native Americans, and Black, Negro, African slaves, and indentured servants, and whatever so-called free Black folk that may have been around from having any part to do with the development of the Constitution as we know it. So the roots of injustice in American society are as old and deeply ingrained as this government itself, the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. You know, a very selective group, as we talked about in previous shows, but we're only talking about 6% that dominated, you know, the development and the eventual approval of what we call the Constitution today and the Declaration of Independence drafted, well, the Declaration first and then the Constitution drafted by the 6% of American population. They were all rich white men, you know. But, you know, what sticks in my craw, you know, it's the rub, as I like to say, written by the authors of the article that I drew from. It was that last statement that the authors made in this article. And it said, quote, you know, verbatim, word for word, yet even with all of these flaws, the ideal put forth in the Mayflower Compact paved the way for centuries of American democracy. And for that, it is still worthy of celebration. You know, see, it's like, yeah, we'll tell you about all these flaws and all these failings and all these issues, but we're going to tell it in such a way that we're going to pretend in our final statement like all those things were resolved, and or all those things were, oh yeah, by the way, or all those things were, you know, really the blessing more so than the curse. Yeah, it was, but only for a select few. And it's still the issues we struggle with today. But those disclaimers is what drives me crazy. You know, we're always presented with the issues as if the problems aren't really as bad as the people present them. So that's why I know even when we do shows like this where we're talking about the themes like, you know, the history of white people, since that's not something people are used to hearing, well, let's talk about. It always, you know, ruffles feathers. It always rattles cages. You know, because it's almost like people are saying, yeah, you know, we've talked enough about that. Just leave it alone. Can we just move on? You know, can we, you know, just deal with the issues that are current? Well, these are the issues that are current, and they are still the current issues because the common conversations, you know, never happen. You know, people are so sensitive to the topics of race and color in this country of ours, you know, that there's no reason. I mean, there's no surprise, rather, every reason, but no surprise that the phobia of color is so rampant in this country, even today, where it dictates policy, it dictates rules. It no matter what rules are broken, it dictates behaviors, you know, in the courtroom, you know, in the streets. Man, I mean, it's depressing, yeah, you know, but it's also, you know, frustrating, you know, and I don't know if there's much frustration in depression. You know, I don't know if frustration is a symptom of depression or if depression is a symptom of frustration or if they stand separate and apart. But it's very, very frustrating for me to realize that the true history of this country has never been a ready conversation. And that I think that's why people have such a hard time hearing these things, because there's things we never heard before, as they should have been taught early on in school. You want to change the course of the public school systems, you know, in just about any metropolitan city that has a dominant black or population of color that attends the public schools, change the way you teach history, especially American history, and stop making it so exclusive and start making it so inclusive and start pointing out the failings and the flaws and the inconsistencies of this, you know, so-called democracy. You know, it's hypocritical, you know, to say you are a country founded on the rules of democracy, born from, you know, a constitution that identified certain populations of your constitution as being only 3/5 of a person, and label that 3/5 a minority. Well, they're a minority, you know, by the fact that they're not whole, they're only 3/5. That means they're not complete, you know, and they're a minority by, you know, the fact that you, the ones who control, you know, the way you do your government, also control the way you count people. You know, I mean, you know, if I want to stay in power, you know, you better believe I'm going to take charge of how my constituency is counted, you know, and you better believe, I don't care if it does cost billions of dollars to do it, I'm going to control it. So in one particular instance, for example, you know, after all these years, you know, 400-500 years, depending on what math you want to use, black folks have never been more than 12% of the population. Now, I don't know how anybody can accept that, but you know we do because we've been so conditioned to. Not just black folks. I'm talking about American society. It's like, you know, it's not popular to challenge the census. Just get it over with. Most people don't even know what it's for. Most people don't even know its value. Most people don't even know its purpose, you know. And so most people just say, yeah, hey, well, it's just a, you know, color, it's just a number.
I was just thinking that's kind of like a lot of things that we still deal with today. We don't really know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we just accept it. Oh, that's just, you know, but without really understanding what it is, you know, and they'll blame the census on, well, not enough African Americans participate. You know, that's still the ongoing. Even though it's been proven that those numbers have increased, sometimes it's still at 12%, which is crazy. But you mentioned, you know, changing history, or, you know, properly teaching history, let's say, you know, or teaching history and filling in the gaps, those holes that when they teach history, you know, we talk about one subject matter and then all of a sudden we jump to something else, you know, which we've talked about in previous shows and trying to connect the dots, you know, in history. And we lose context of the timelines and how things occur. You know, like we were joking last week. One minute we're talking about the pilgrims coming over with their high white socks and eating turkey with the Native Americans. And next thing you know, the United States is colonized, you know, but doesn't that bring into play now, you know, the popular topic of critical race theory, or CRT, and that continued debate that goes back, you know, back and forth now. What do you think about that?
Well, argument, it, only changes its flow, only becomes a conversation when the issues change their perspective. So you use critical race theory. Okay, that's a relatively recent term that doesn't give justice to the history of America. You know, so when you have a government like in Florida that says, we're not going to teach anything that has anything to do with race, that's the continuum. That's the ongoing story. That's the whole foundation of American history as we know it. There's never been a concise, intended approach by American government to teach the truth about its history. So the changes of the flow just has to do with who's in charge at the time. You know, there's not this kind of, you know, what was so attractive to me growing up, what really stimulated my imagination, you know, was, you know, the different kind of speeches and cliche words that we were given, you know, like Patrick Henry, you know, give me liberty or give me death. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, we want to see ourselves in this kind of revolutionary attitude. We want to believe that these founders were, you know, campaigners for all, not just for a select few. And our history never gave us a choice but to believe it that way. And then things started, you know, cracks started showing in the mirror, you know, like you talk about jumping back and forth. Well, we jumped from, you know, the Revolutionary War to the Civil War with no linked understanding of how we got there, when it's American history that caused it. So, again, students, you know, in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s or the 90s, you know, and I'm saying the 60s on up, didn't really have the experience of living at the shifting of the tides in American society. So whatever history was brought, it was always going to be an argument right at the dinner table, you know, for black folks in particular. But still, the true telling of the story never changed. So instead, we were given opportunities to have these moments of victory, like, you know, Thurgood Marshall, you know, being on the Supreme Court, or, you know, Dr. Ralph Bunche, or, you know, the different heroes that everybody learned, a handful of them, the same names we all got, you know, but very selective, you know, like Martin Luther King Jr. And it wasn't until after his death that we even learned the greatness of Malcolm X, you know, that, but ours had always been the kind of thing that suggested if there was a H. Rapp Brown or Eldridge Cleaver or Dr. Huey P. Newton, you know, or Stokely Carmichael, you know, in the mix, you know, be aware of them because they're preaching hate, you know. And so it's like we either were taught to blend into American society, or we were led to believe if we failed to blend, then we were a problem, you know, to the people, you know, that we were, you know, a revolutionary, you know, to a cause that was about equality, that we were extremists, that we were black supremacists, you know, whatever the case may be, but never in contrast to the ongoing theme of white supremacy, you know, even to the point to where we didn't really understand white supremacy as being really the foundation of American society, you know, and the continuum of it is what white supremacists are crying about now. All they want is to be given back to them what they had before, you know, this form of government messed around and changed just enough of the rules that caused them to begin to lose, you know, their power. You know, like, you know, that idiot who was, you know, who was that guy who set all the slaves free? You know, what was his reason for doing that? You know, nobody's going to say, oh, he was a Republican. Like, oh, no, he couldn't have been that, you know, but he set all these slaves free, and what was the agenda behind doing that? You know, and like, does he realize he gave away our government when he did that? He gave, you know, he gave these black men the right to vote. You know, Even though we didn't know we had the right to vote, we didn't know what that meant. You know, there wasn't any handbook that taught, you know, black folks who were freed by the emancipation how to be free in America. You know, it was, you know, freedom without, you know, without a cause. It was like, we did what we did in Congress. Now, y'all got to figure out how to live by it. But in the meantime, understand that we're going to change the rules continuously as you try to figure out what this Emancipation Proclamation and these civil rights laws that we passed, you know, what they're meant to be. You're going to have to figure it out as you go. So even like with General Sherman, you know, in, what was it, 1893 or something like that, you know, when he dictated, you know, that those freed, you know, would be given, you know, 400 acres of land, you know, divided amongst them along the, you know, the southern coastal line, you know, 400 acres, you know, not just that was all. It was like a continuum of acres for each, you know, plantation to divide amongst themselves and whatever apparatus they needed to, in order to work the land, which, of course, a mule was a part of it. But as soon as he gave it to the people, Andrew Johnson, you know, the next president who stepped in after Lincoln was assassinated, immediately took that stuff back. I almost said the other word. You know, so this is, you know, we've been pawns in this game that sells to the rest of the world this idea of democracy. But whatever we do, we don't ever want the rest of the world to know how we really treat our constituents. So we'll give billions and trillions of dollars to other countries fighting for their freedom. But those who have gained their freedom, we won't even give them reparations. It's what else can I say, man? It's the great hypocrisy of democracy, you know, that we'll do unto others before we'll do for ourselves. And the rest of the world, you know, no, they ain't stupid. So it's like, hey, we're not going to say anything that's going to stop us from getting this, you know, this handout. You know, we're not going to jeopardize, you know, what you provide. If we have to be, you know, conspirators of the silence of this true non-democratic society that's providing a new way of or supporting a new way of life for us, bet. You know, we're definitely not. We're going to be collaborators of the silence. You know, so here we are. So, yeah, critical race theory, that's one element of an ongoing thing that has been constantly changed, rewritten, packaged, and redelivered in some other form. So maybe 20 years from now, there'll be something else, you know. But it's the way of America to hide its secret at all costs. And what's so unfortunate, even amongst myself and my white friends, we can't even have an honest conversation about the true discrepancies of this government and how it, in fact, divides the people along color lines constantly in everything it does. That's the whole point of the census. That's what it was designed for. Since 1790, the U.S. has taken a census that divides citizens into racial categories, which have evolved over the past 220-plus years. But still, the 2010 census divided Americans into white, black, or Afro-Americans, Indians or Alaska Natives, Asians, Native Hawaiians, or other Pacific Islanders, and some other race. So, you know, it's like, either you're American or you're not. You know, and man, wouldn't it be so much simpler if everybody was American, you know, and all we need to do is see where Americans live, you know, and then how do we even have to worry about or deal with how we're going to divide up the people to determine what rights they get based on the representation they're provided. You know, that anyway, man, this is a hard thing for me to, you know, compartmentalize in less than an hour when I've had, you know, a lifetime of frustration in having to live with these changing rules. So I don't care if you call it critical race theory, you know, I don't care what you call it. You know, somewhere along the line, though, we have to develop, we have to offer some element, some semblance, some idea of truth. So that's where I am with all that, man. I don't know if I answered anything you asked or not, you know. Maybe you're somewhere in the corner snoring right now. I'm just going on and on. But it's a trip, man. I don't know how to separate my life of living in this country from the country. I don't know how to pretend that I've only lived in segments of my life when I've lived the entirety of it. And I've seen the impacts of double talk constantly throughout the reign of my own existence in this country. I mean, 3/4 of a century is a long time. But maybe not. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I've lived 3/4 of a century, you know, and that's a lifetime isn't that far removed from the throes of slavery. We're only talking about one generation removed from that. You know, my mother's parents would have been directly involved one way or the other with the themes of slavery. That's how close it was to the time I was born. So there we are, man. I don't know. Let me back up a second and give you a chance to say something, man.
Not really much to say. You know, this discussion originally came from us looking at the origin of white people and meaning of that, ladies and gentlemen, and just the label, the category, or whatever, you know, white, black, et cetera. Because, you know, like that, I always ask the question, they weren't white in Europe. You know, there was no such thing. But I guess slavery, I guess, played a major part in that. And then having to identify, you know, European and Africans. But then it just seems like it just evolved into, and again, going back towards manifest destiny, just this belief, this religion. I saw this quote, the religion of whiteness, that, you know, it's that identity that signifies purity, you know, and virtue. You know, even you mentioned the Mayflower Compact. So yeah, they still had already this sense of this pan-European, I guess, identity. And then, like I said, just this symbol of white being pure and virtue. So, I mean, I don't even know how that can, you know, you're asking like just some sense of, what I just don't even see how we can get past that. Like I said, that's a lot for them to give up, you know, all this things that they've acquired in the religion of whiteness, of all these, you know, the transatlantic slave, you know, almost Native American extinction. You know, colonization all over the world, apartheid in South Africa. How? And to this day, I mean, just we were talking about Emily Mays or whatever in this situation in Virginia, and all because they were trying to provide a safe opportunity to talk about race, and now it's evolved into this lawsuit. And again, and I know you don't want to get into critical race theory again, but.
Well, it's not that. It's just that you kind of losing me a little bit, because what I was assuming we set out to do was talk about how where this all began, not where it is now. We know where it is now because we're living where it is now, but it doesn't explain how it all began, you know. And it's not that slavery started, you know, with the shipment of Africans to America. We know better than that, you know. Slavery has been around, you know, we find remnants of slavery through the pre-biblical eras, you know. I mean, you know, slaves did the major labor that created the pyramids, you know. So it's not like, you know, it's something that just was born out of Africa, although born out of Africa would definitely have its own rudiments in, you know, the history of Egypt. You know, and the continent that in itself didn't call itself Africa. You know, all of these names given were names given by those, you know, who conquered the land, so to say. But you know, America, you know, founded as a white nation, you know, really that's, you know, that's something that was started by, you know, Virginia Richmond came up with the idea of white, you know, and so it's, you know, it has its origin, but what's to me, what's important, you know, that never is talked about is, you know, the impact of privilege. You know, the impact of privilege is something that's sidestepped. You know, you know, there is a privilege to being born white in America. And I don't know why people have such a hard time acknowledging that as everyday parts of conversation, whether it's, you know, on the political format, you know, whether it's what's talked about in the news, whether it's the issues that happen, you know, that people may cry out as being unjust or, you know, something that you just brought up about, you know, conflicts of intent leads to lawsuits or whatever. But it's the foundation of privilege. It's the whole idea of this concept of white being born by just a few individuals who saw, you know, that it had its place in the moment, not having any idea of its impact on the future, but knowing that the moment would be what they had and what they could control. And it became a continuum because that's what we're dealing with today. You know, that element of control. I don't care if it's, you know, I don't care if it's Obama or Biden as president or Bush or Trump. You know, it's this element of power, this exclusiveness of power that is born from this idea of privilege. You know, and everybody has to play the part. We don't have people standing up in Congress screaming and hollering collectively about needing to change the idea of privilege. You know, we have people who are talking about how privilege has given them the opportunity through civil rights to be able and argue the point of justice, but not even recognizing that. But you're arguing a point in defense of the people who in a heartbeat will tell you that you don't even have a rightful place to be here. That's never the argument that we have. America's never shouting itself down. You know, it's never telling itself that, you know, that you guys, you white supremacists need to understand you were born from a theme of supremacy. But we never meant, and then fill in the blanks. But that's never the conversation they had. They never talk about what they did set out to do, and they never talk about what they didn't mean to do. And they never talk about how they haven't understood making certain changes in civil rights have caused a great confusion within the bowels of the of government. These are the conversations that people never have, man. So, you know, why make black folks the perpetrators of their own misery? You know, why blame it on black people? You know, why blame it on so-called indigenous people? Why blame it on Asian Americans? Why blame it on Muslim? Why blame it on everybody but yourself? So anyway, you know, that's in the bottom line of all I'm saying, man. You know, it's hard for me to have a open dialogue with any of my white friends when we have to sidestep or tiptoe around, you know, the issue of privilege and whatever it is we're going to talk about. You know, let's talk about the comparisons, like that one thing we didn't get to talk about tonight. You know, the unwritten rules of being black in America. You know, what are the unwritten rules of being white in America? I would love to have a conversation like that on a show like this, you know, where my white friends are talking as openly about what it was like to be white in America, you know, as I'm talking about what it's been like to be black in America. You know, and not to mention those who have had to do a split decision, you know, having a white mother and a black father or a black, you know, mother and a white father, whatever, and how they've had to go through life as well. You know, these are the conversations we just unfortunately don't have on shows like this, and I wish we did. I wish it became a regular conversation. We're not going to talk about one without having the balance of the other. It's always going to be present in any conversation, two sides of the issue of democracy in America. All right. There I am, man. You know, couple other things. I'm sorry, Will, did you want to say anything?
No, go ahead.
I'm looking at, maybe wrapping this up Wednesday. If not, feeling like maybe we're done with even talking about it. I don't know anything else to talk about. I think we pretty much covered. We can start from the Constitution, maybe. We've already talked about Manifest Destiny. Maybe we could talk more about the 20th century challenges, of America growing up, when it comes to issues of color. Like, maybe there is a time to talk about the history of Klan worship, the Ku Klux Klan. Maybe there is something about, but we've talked about all that. And we've talked about the history of Hollywood and its treatment of race, I don't know. Maybe the topic itself, overall has done what it was supposed to do. But in the meantime, there's still other things that continue to spring up, like Catholic nuns, which I hope we get a chance to talk about Wednesday. The story of black farmers and how they lost $326 billion worth of land in the 20th century. How could that happen? But it did. Maybe that's what it, I don't know, man. I don't know. What do you think? Are we depressing the people by talking about the issues and the challenges of being black in America? Has that time, run its course, and now all people want to do is talk about, glitz and glamour and how wonderful it is in America?
Sometimes I don't know. I would leave that up to the listeners to chime in. I saw somebody press one on the phone, but it looks like they got out the queue. Caller, if you want to jump back in, just hit the button again. Oh, they did. Okay, good. But
bring them in.
Before we bring them in, it's like I don't know, and maybe this caller can answer that question for you. But sometimes it just seems like it's just better to promote the idea and the theory of human rights. Just seems better to just dream about it rather than for us to figure out how to develop it instead of things just being the same all the time. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I just don't know to answer your question. I just don't know sometimes. Let's go ahead.
Sometimes that's the best answer. Sometimes I don't know is the best thing. One of the best counseling sessions I ever had with somebody, when they asked me a whole flood of questions, I just said, I don't know. Let's look it up together. But go ahead, man.
Yeah, let's go ahead and bring the caller here. Area code 469-834. Area code 469-834. Hey, good evening. Thanks for calling in to the Greenhouse Effect. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, what's up, baby?
What's up,
baby? Yo, what's good, JP?
What's up, man? J Pastor?
Man, I was like a little late, and I wasn't going to click in the queue, but you had said something that kind of triggered a little memory. You was talking about how, something that occurred, just a couple generations ago, and then I remember the story. My grandfather told me, he said that when he was young, he used to pick cotton for his mother, and she would give him like 10 cents a week. So I guess maybe, the mother was, contracted or had something going on with the people who owned the plantation or whatever. And he was like, man, I got tired of picking cotton for a whole week, and she only gave me 10 cents. He said it was 9 cents to get in the movie, and with the one penny he could buy his snacks. But he was like, man, I kept my whole dime and just snuck in the movies, So.
You just snuck in. I heard that.
So, yeah, it wasn't that long ago, So.
No. That's the amazing part of it, right? Because this country isn't that old. But I'm not sure that we as Americans have any sense of age and time, and years. I don't know how that gravitates. I don't know what our understanding of it is. But this is a very young, but we don't realize it's a very young country if we don't understand world history. And when I say young, I'm talking about for the form of government that we live under. Obviously, this country is much older than 1776, but just using 1776 as the go point, you know, this is in comparison to the rest of the world, this is an infant. You know, this is an infant of existence, you know, that has so much dictatorial power, you know, that, yeah. So when you talk about probably there was sharecropping and you talk about, you know, that experience and you're talking about a conversation that you had with somebody, that's how close the time is from slavery. You know, that there's conversations that I wish I had them, you know, with my mother about what she remembered growing up. I wish, you know, they had shared those stories. And you know what my great fear is, you know, that so many of our stories will go untold, you know, because, you know, so many of us have just had the desire to tell it, just driven right out of it. Like, keep it to yourself. You know, man, just a story like that to me is worth its weight in gold, you know. 10 cents,
yeah.
You know, 10 cents after working, you know, picking cotton all week. 10 cents, but 9 cents is what it cost to get in the movies. We still had a penny left over for candy. But, oh boy, being, you know, resourceful, I just sneak in. Then I could decide what I want to do with the whole dime. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, man. Yeah, right on.
Yeah. And
right on.
So, and I know my grandfather had to be born in probably like in about 1938, you know, 38, 39.
Makes sense.
He definitely had a great testimony, some stories that he had shared with me. And just a side note, hey man, we trust in y'all on whatever topic y'all want to recycle or not recycle, whatever you want to pull up, man. We as your listeners, we trust in y'all that y'all gonna get it right every time, whichever way it flows and goes, you know.
Amen.
But I know it's kind of past our time, so I'm gonna save my grandpa's stories for maybe next time, you know?
Yeah, right on, man. There's always a time to hear that, though. I hope you know that. You know, it doesn't matter what the topic of the show is. The bottom line is that every topic is always delivered from a black perspective. So sometimes it's the stories within the stories that shared more light that will share more light than the stories we're telling. You know, you know, I'd rather hear about personal interest stories anyway. You know, that's really what we don't have anymore. You know, what we don't have anymore. You know, and I don't know why, but I am thankful for having the opportunity, at least, you know, for an hour, a couple nights a week, to just talk my head off. You know, even if it's just about, even if it's just to, you know, just, I don't know, man, not even if it's just to anybody, man. Thank you, man, for, I don't hesitate to share the stories of remembrance. You know, those are the stories that, you know, so many of us have, especially us older guard, you know, we've just been taught, you know, to keep it to ourselves, you know, and it's just stories we don't hear enough about. And because we don't hear enough about them, we get the stories that we have, you know, and we get the stories that we have while everybody else gets to tell their stories ad nauseum. They have movies, they have books, they have videos, they have everything. You know, there's always about, they have superheroes, they have everything, you know, that stimulates the imagination about them. But we don't have enough stories out there to stimulate the rest of the world about us. That's why Black Panther was such a big hit. You know, it's not that people don't want it, but the controlling factor fears it. So what do we do? Yeah, man. So anyway, sorry to go off like that. Thank you so much for calling in, man.
Yeah, thank you, Jason.
Man, my pleasure, my pleasure.
Amen. All right, Will.
Let me ask you before we go, in having these discussions, like you're saying, why not? You know, how do we deal with that emotional ebb and flow from these type of discussions? Maybe I'm thinking like we don't have them because we don't know how to deal with the emotions that come, you know, that's in us, let alone the emotions from dealing or having these talks with other people. But, you know, I mean, how do we deal with that? you know, it just and being, you know, personal and talking about family history and stories, you know, what do you think, or it's a quick suggestion or whatever you might want to add in dealing with these emotions and this energy that comes up from these discussions?
Who are you asking? You asking your pastor or me or both of
them? Well, both of you. Both of you.
Well, I think it's kind of like the ant, you know, eating the elephant one bite at a time. We just haven't had enough practice in doing this. And I think the whole issue of trying to be, you know, politically correct or, you know, racially correct or trying to be, you know, the sensitivity for others, trying to spare people the awkwardness of dialogue, you know, which that's a big part of it, the awkwardness of dialogue. Man, you know, most people are not comfortable with talking about themselves. You know, even a show like this, The Great Resistance, is people fear calling in, like they think we're going to make them talk on the show. It's like, but it's not even, it's like this, you know, I don't know. It's something about being Black in America that somehow imposes, I believe, imposes upon us this restrictive idea of dialogue. Like, we have to be really careful, you know, that we don't offend. Well, you know, while we're being offended every day, it's amazing. I don't know. What do you think, Pastor?
Yeah.
Man, I think it's definitely, a very, I guess, sensitive topic, especially because, you know, those in darkness definitely don't want to be exposed, you know, like I Am Legend. They don't want to be exposed by the light, and we've been, you know, conditioned in the mindset, you know, we've been conditioned in the mindset not to expose, you know. It's, it's a fearful topic. You know,
let me put you on the spot real quick, you know, because you do a lot of things similar to what we do, you know, here on this show. You do a lot of things. You have your own discussion points, discussion times, and different things that you talk with, and you open engagement for people to join in with you. Even from a spiritual point of view, that can still offer some levels of being uncomfortable, you know, for people. Even in dealing with spirituality, let's not even talk about race for a second. You know, again, just being comfortable with having these moments of being transparent, of being open, you know, in that regard, you know, I'm just being fair as far as your, you know, your comment and response.
Even in whatever topic it is, you know, we know that in the spiritual topic, they killed Jesus for, you know, exposing light and making things uncomfortable for them. You know, we see all our heroes from Malcolm to Martin to, you know, like, what's his name? Ah, they shot him in his, is it Edgar? Edgar Myers? Edgar somebody? They shot him in like his driveway?
Megar Evers. Megar.
Okay, yes, sir.
Megar Evers.
You know, these people was killed for, you know, having an opinion, you know. And like even in the spiritual, you know, not just Jesus, but his disciples, you know. Like people, we have to understand like that we're in the world and it's some, you know, principalities, some rulers, some darkness in high places, you know, that don't want no light to be exposed. We strangers in this land, man, and not just, you know, as far as the USA, but just planet Earth alone whenever you're trying to, you know, proclaim something that, you know it's the truth. You know, it's not something that we are hoping and guessing and thinking. No, this is equality. I mean, this is injustice.
Amen. That's right.
You know what I'm saying? This is, you know, this is the truth. And other people, you know, especially those who are benefiting off of the lie, whether it be spiritual, whether it be, you know, racial, you know, hey, man, you messing with our benefits by opening up your mouth. You know, so we're going to, you know, do things to promote fear against that. You know, we're going to do things that, you know, hinder you and stop you from, you know, this perpetual lie that we've been living. You know, the scripture I think we were reading today, if I'm not mistaken, talking about, you know, you are of your father, the devil, and he was a liar from the beginning, you know. And it talked about something about, like, lust in there too, you know what I'm saying? So these lies, they, you know, generate, oh, this is for my lust, my pleasure. Now I get, you know, to have the fatted cow, and I get to have the, like, I was thinking about something earlier I had seen, like, hey, man, like, these people are so powerful and possess so much power and wealth and generational wealth because when they came over here and they, you know, signed the Constitution and, you know, gave the Indians smallpox and, you know, tricked these people and killed these people and slaughtered these people, you know what I'm saying? Like, they divided up this country. You know, they was giving their people, like, oh, you're getting 400 acres of land. You're getting, you know, 500 acres of land. So, I mean, generations should never go broke when, you know what I'm saying, my grandfather had 400 acres of land, you know? I mean, sell 100 acres, sell 200, sell 399 acres, and you still going, if you're not just foolish, you still going to be able to allow that money to just trickle down, you know? So, but the good thing about it is we have that hope in the fact that we know that this is not eternity. You know, we know that we have a hope that one day somebody who is really in control, you know, is going to do like he did for the Israelites when he said, hey, Pharaoh, you got to let these people go. You know what I'm saying? So eventually, and we want it right now. It's something that we so desire right now, and we have access to, you know, take advantage of it, whether it be education, you know,
there's another challenge though, you know, that's brewing, you know, like, let the people go, but where are the people going to go? You know, see, we still, if this is the country we're going to inhabit, we have to figure out, you know, how we take control of our own destiny, you know, and I think that's, you know, the great question that, you know, that, in my estimation, you know, the Lord is waiting for us to answer. So where is it that you want to go? You know, I ain't got no problem letting you go, but where are you going to go? If you're going to stay in the land that you're being freed from, how are you going to work the land to maintain your freedom? These are the conversations we don't have, and we have people appointed that are in a position to dictate where we go, even if it's within the land. But that ain't the conversation that's happening. You know, so we're caught in this perpetuation of impasse, you know, and we get just enough so people can claim, see the progress you're making, you know, but in this country, you know, that we have been transfixed into, you know, we're homegrown. This is the land that we have been brought to. You know, this is the only place we exist as Negroes, now black, is in America. We don't exist nowhere else like this. This is a homegrown byproduct of living in a racist society. So it's not so much, to me anyway, where to go. You know, to me it's how to be set free in where you are. You know, and I don't know. That doesn't seem to be the popular topic at hand. We seem to be satisfied with the illusion of progress, you know, and, you know, because unlike slaves, we get paid, you know, we get paid just enough, you know, to not call ourselves slaves. Anyway, man, look, you know, Jay Pastor, thanks for your comments, man. We've kind of gone, you know, well past the hour, and I'm hoping Will is still out there somewhere that, you know, he can step on in And thank you so much for the comments you've made, man, and especially just being brought in like that. And, you know, hopefully you keep calling back, man.
Yeah, hopefully, I appreciate you letting me put you on the spot. Thank you, JP.
Oh, yeah, nah, man, it was a pleasure, man, to be, you know, in y'all presence and be able to even have some type of input, man. I definitely appreciate that.
Right on,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely.
Thanks again. All righty, Will. It's time to wrap it up, man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time here on blogtalkradio.com. So that's the Great House of Pets. You can find Dad and I now also Saturday mornings, 10 a.m. Still the Greenhouse Effect, but on our new show, Creatures of Habits. The good, the bad, the ugly. 10 a.m. Check us
right
out.
Right on.
All right.
Yeah.
This is the Greenhouse Effects radio show, where we provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experiences, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. I'm Will. That's Bill over there. Until Wednesday, we hope that you all be safe, be blessed, and most importantly, be yourself, because everybody else is taken. All right. You all have a good night. Daddy-O, I'll talk to you later, man. Love you. And
love you back, man.
Have a good night. Amen.
Amen.